call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at basically right at 1:30 on Monday, January 29, 2018. We are meeting today in room 205 of the Capitol Building. Please silence your cell phones out of courtesy, and thank you to Ben and Jeannie for helping us out today. We appreciate that. Committee members in attendance today is Senator Giesel, Senator Machicki, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Wilson may be late. This afternoon, we will take up once again CS for House Bill 43, Judiciary, New Drugs for the Terminally Ill, by Representative Jason Gren. We heard this bill last Wednesday. So we will hear from the bill sponsor and heard from the bill sponsor and took public testimony on Wednesday, January 23rd. So Representative Gren and Brooke Ivey, staff to Representative Gren, please come to the table. And we are looking forward today to hearing responses to the questions by committee members last week and answer any further questions. You may begin anytime.
Madam Chair, thank you again so much for the opportunity to discuss this legislation. As you mentioned, we have some answers to the questions that were presented last week, and Brooke Ivey will go through some of those. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you again. For the record, my name is Brooke Ivey, staff to Representative Jason Gren. And I believe there were four questions that we had outstanding, and I just would take a minute to respond to those. Firstly, the question of the status of Hawaii's legislation, right to trial legislation, came up, given that there was a veto by Governor Ige back in 2016. So it appears that there has been right to trial legislation reintroduced by Senator Green, SB 2268, that took place on January 19th of this year. And at this time, our office did reach out to the sponsor of that legislation, and as far as we understand, there has not been any support of opposition or support so far by Governor Ige. So that remains to be seen how that will proceed. The second question that I had here was that Senator Wilson had asked about if there are limits to the length of time an investigational drug can be in a phase of the FDA process. And what our research found was there aren't actually any set limits, but the FDA is involved in designing each phase of a trial, and they determine when phases are finished and when products move to a new phase. So it's possible something could stay in phase two, an investigational drug could stay in phase two for, you know, a long time, but if that took place, that was because the FDA determined the company had not produced enough data to move on to the next phase. I would also note, again, that it may or may not be financially beneficial for a company to do that, as drug manufacturers, per federal law, are not able to gain any financial benefit other than cost recovery for those investigational drugs. And it's also pretty timely and costly to go through clinical trials over a long period of time. So, the third question that I had to follow up on was, how often, Senator Giesel had asked how often investigational drugs are distributed by manufacturers free of charge. And that was actually a much more difficult question to determine the answer to, I'm afraid. I don't have a firm answer, but there's many patient assistance programs out there, and they're accessible through a number of venues, whether through the manufacturer directly or patient assistant networks or research institutions. And at this time, my understanding is that public reporting is not required by drug manufacturers. I also found a journal article, granted it was some time ago, but from 2009, that stated that only 4% of drug manufacturers disclosed the number of patients they directly assist. And so I think that's a tough one to identify. However, I did find there is a, an assistance network called Patient Assistant Network, Patient Access Network Foundation. Thank you. And they state that they have, since 2004, they've provided nearly 1 million underinsured patients with over $2.6 billion in financial assistance through over 60 disease-specific programs. And that is just one foundation, so I'm sure there's numerous programs that are out there. And it's hard to say whether those are I think those are more geared towards existing FDA-approved drugs, but it's possible there might be investigational drugs looped into that. So I hope that will give you a sense of the answer to that question. Lastly, Senator Von Imhoff, you were asked, do health insurance companies outline whether or not they cover clinical trial investigational drugs in their policies? While I could not confirm that all health insurance companies include whether or not they cover clinical trials or investigational drugs in their specific policies, it appears most do to avoid legal challenge should they decline coverage without that being in writing. That said, in terms of Premier specifically, I was able to find documentation addressing their coverage of investigational and experimental treatments, and they were very clear. So in addition to that being included in their specific policies and plans, they also have, informational sheets for patients to look up, and they state, Premier wants our members and their doctors to understand what we will pay for and what may not be paid for. We post a list on our website of services that may be considered not medically necessary or investigational and experimental. The doctor, the member, can call them to determine what would be covered. But they said insurance usually does not pay for investigational or experimental medications. So they were pretty clear on that, but also said that they review these types of things regularly to see if the value, the benefit outweighs the harm to the patient and try to add those to their covered list. So I hope that clarifies a little bit.
Any follow-up questions or comments?
I have one.
Senator Machicki.
Why is Representative Grand, why was this not law earlier? Do you know what would be the natural resistance to right to try law?
You can go.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, so I can let Representative Gren speak to why he brought forth this legislation, but in terms of opposition, the most common opposition that you'll find nationwide is the idea of false hope. So that's, an argument that's been made. And many patients who have been diagnosed as terminally ill would argue that, some hope is better than none. False hope is better than no hope at all. So that's kind of been the most common argument. Also that the compassionate use program through the FDA currently exists for this purpose. However, the point of this legislation is to try and streamline that and cut through some of the federal red tape because it is taking quite a long time for people who don't have time to access these medications.
And I have one more.
Thank Senator Chiggy, follow up.
I was just curious about it, but and I was not so and spent a lot of time with this bill, but I didn't realize that Hawaii actually vetoed it, and apparently it wasn't overridden. I know you answered that. I was just kind of getting my arms around the subject of the bill when you did. So what was your answer to the Hawaii situation?
Sure. Senator Machicki, through the chair. So the Hawaii veto occurred in 2016, and that was following Governor Brown's veto in California, which he later reversed, or additional legislation was passed. So there's some thought that Governor Ige was taking notes from Governor Brown on that veto, but he did state in 4 points in his veto statement that, one, the compassionate use program already provides access to investigational drugs, which you could certainly argue whether or not that's an effective program. Two, that it interferes with the overall FDA system, which may have unintended consequences of delaying development of potentially life-saving drugs. I would, the sponsor would counter to that essentially, this is specifically designed not to impact clinical trials participation, and so we would argue that you might actually get additional data out of the right to try in terms of those investigational medications being available outside of clinical trials and that data being provided to the FDA. Three, it violates the supremacy clause. And four, it's unclear what actual benefits the right to try could offer patients. So that was Governor Ige's statement. And at this time, that legislation did pass without any opposition through both the Hawaii House and Senate. but was vetoed. Not sure why there wasn't an override. However, new legislation has been introduced this January.
Perfect. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Maybe just a clarification.
Yes, Senator Bagage.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I would say, rather than false hope is better than no hope at all, I would say any hope is better than no hope at all. Because, as I mentioned in the last hearing, in fact, some of these experimental drugs go beyond false hope. They actually do extend life in an appropriate, meaningful way. So I would just maybe suggest we not say false hope in the sense that it actually does achieve something. And I certainly am a hopeful person. So thank you.
So I just have one last question myself is, when you were doing some research on Premiera, did they at least provide a clause of how a person could potentially petition that a particular investigative or experimental drug, if it's maybe in phase three, pretty far along, let's just say, do the insurances at least allow an open door to consider a case by case? And if you don't have that information, it's not critical. It was just something I was curious if you picked up on your investigation.
Senator von Imhoff, or Madam Chair, I'm not sure if this answers that specifically, but I am reading here that Premiera writes that specific codes for investigational or experimental medications can be so denial of those can be reviewed. So they have a review process, and I believe it allows you to go through a benefits advisory process with Premiera, at which they take 5 to 7 days to review your request. So it's possible that that could be included during that process, but I'm not sure.
That sounds reasonable, and I appreciate you sharing that. Okay. With no further discussion, all right, I'll put my glasses on. Hearing none, is there a motion to move this bill out of committee?
Madam Chair, I move the committee substitute for House Bill number 43, version 30, LS0207, Juliet, from this committee to the next with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing and hearing none, HB 43 is moved from the committee with the understanding that legislative legal is authorized to make any necessary technical and or conforming adjustments. And we will take a short break to sign the paperwork. This concludes our business for the day. On Wednesday, January 31st, we will have a briefing from the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education. We will also hear and take public testimony on SB 128, Marijuana Education and Treatment Fund, by Senator Giesel. And on Friday, February 2nd, we will hear and take public testimony on SB 81, Department of Health and Social Services Centralized Registry Background Checks, by Senate rules at the request of the governor. Are there any member closing comments?
Just a brief one, Madam Chair.
Senator Marchicki.
I just wanted to introduce my intern to, she's going to be the Senate Health and Social Services Committee aide. Her name is Caitlin Stansberry, that you'll see out in the a very timid wave there. So please welcome Caitlin, and thank you for the opportunity to do that.
Welcome, Caitlin.
I guess, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Bagage.
I should introduce my new Hess aide, who has replaced the late Richard Benavides, and this is Joshua Spring, who has worked with me extensively on homelessness issues and is happy to be working with the committee.
Welcome. And then we have Lauren Rasmussen, my Senate aide. So welcome, everybody. Well, thank you all for attending. It is about 1:44 p.m., and we are adjourned.